you're trained as a CPA to do these detail things, and then when you try to start managing them, it's kind of the opposite. And you're not taught how to manage. You have to learn that. But all your skills that you've ever been taught in your entire life are the complete opposite of
Yep.
how to manage somebody.
It's messy, right?
Yeah.
It's a
Super
little
messy.
messy.
This is the first time we've had a guest on that I don't know. I think that
Yeah, that's
I'm
why he's
excited about
nervous.
this.
This is
Yeah.
good. Keep on
I'm
his
really
toes.
nervous here. Yeah. I don't know what to say here except hello and welcome. We are all the sons of CPAs. Join us as we question the current state of the accounting and tax industry with the next generation of professionals leading this space. We are the change agents in an industry fraught with money and inertia. Let's begin the Sons of CPAs with your hosts, Jason Ackerman and Scott Scarena.
And our special guest this week, Brandon Poe.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Are you the president of Poe Group Advisors? Do you have a title?
I am just the founder, I guess you would say president of Poe Group Advisors. We sell CPA firms all over North America, and we also run a virtual practice management coaching program called Accounting Practice Academy.
Yes, and you're based in Charleston, so really close.
Charleston, yep.
So let's start back, because you didn't originally start out with your own firm. How'd you get into accounting?
So I started out with Ernst & Young and started out as an auditor. Immediately knew it wasn't for me, public practice. So, yeah, I especially didn't like working in a really big firm. You know, it was just too, I don't know, it was just too hyper-focused. I wanted to have more of a broader experience. So I left E&Y and went to work for Elliott Davis & Company, which is a pretty large regional firm in South Carolina. And I liked that because I did a little bit of tax and audit and kind of a variety, big variety of work. But ultimately, I decided to leave public practice after about 5 years and went to work in sales right after that. So I went to work in sales of all things. Are you familiar with Ferguson Enterprises? They sell like plumbing and
lighting.
Yes. We see that as a vendor a lot.
I've spent a lot of money at Ferguson.
Yeah. I went to work for an independent plumbing distributor who's a competitor of Ferguson. And it was a father and son business, which is how we got to talking about this podcast, Jason, because I worked between a father and son. And that was a challenge. The son was a good friend of mine. And his dad had founded the company. I came on and so I was caught between some of their battles from time to time. That's when I left public practice. And then
give us a battle. I want to hear one of their battles. Like, you know, you probably got one on top of mind, right?
One of the battles was moving the accounting function, giving the son control of that part of the business. So that was a challenge. But
just giving control is usually some people's challenge too. Giving up control, right?
Exactly.
So what was it like being an outsider in the family business?
You learned how to communicate very clearly because you couldn't say one thing to one person and then mix that message when you were talking to the other person because you'd get called out on it. They'd be like, wait a minute, Brandon said this or Brandon said that. And then they'd come to me and they'd, what did you say? You know, and so I caught myself in those situations. So I had to learn to be sort of brutally candid in that role. I think that was one of my big takeaways from it was just brutal honesty and complete, you know, you couldn't be wishy-washy. Learning when to try to be a buffer between them and when to just put them together. They were two people that didn't get along in a great way. They had a lot of headbutting, so it was a tough spot.
I feel like I have to deal with that with myself. I have to be brutally honest with myself sometimes, and I can't, like, I got nobody else to really.
You have to deal with your two personalities.
Yes. I have to deal with a decision that I've made and then make sure that I tell myself very clearly why I made that decision.
Yeah.
This is the Tax Bandits ad. Tax Bandits is a modern, full-service tax filing platform. File 1099s, 941s, W-2s, 1095s. That's a lot of numbers. Plus many more additional forms with TaxBandit's sleek, modern interface. With a few clicks, a
of a button, you can upload your client's tax information directly into Tax Bandits, either with a direct integration with Xero, QuickBooks Online, or CSV.
We were printing 1099s. We were handwriting them on carbon copies. There was all kinds of 1099 nonsense happening at our firm. How about you guys?
We were doing that too. I mean, that was like 10 years ago. I think you were doing it like 2 years ago. But and there's plenty of people out there that are still printing 1099s. You need to stop doing that. You're wasting your staff's time.
Why would I switch to Tax Bandits?
Great question, Scott. A couple of reasons. First of all, they've got a huge team. So their support is in America. You call them and they pick up the phone. They have great support. So if you want training for your team, they'll do that. They'll migrate your data over. So if you're using Track or Tax 1099 or whatever you're using, they'll help you migrate the data over to Tax Bandits. They're super user-friendly and helpful.
So actually, I think we're getting to the kind of the heart of the matter here is customer service and client service. And we talk about that a lot on our podcast. I think that is a huge drive for me to work with a partner these days, is to know that somebody is there. That might be a reason to switch over to Tax Bandits. So get started today by visiting taxbandits.com and firing your 1099 provider.
Bring your 1099 to the next level. Taxbandits.com.
I'm excited to check them out by visiting taxbandits.com.
I feel like it's different with me and my dad because we get along very well. But if you had the father-son situation where it sounds like you had where they didn't get along super well, I feel like that would be a pretty toxic work environment.
It really was. It was toxic in a lot of ways. And because the son and I were friends going into the relationship, but then I actually worked with the dad on a day-to-day basis. So the dad and I became pretty close. It was tough. There were some tough moments there. I learned a lot from it. In a way, some of the skills I learned helped in business brokerage because I'm brokering deals and you're kind of in that role as an intermediary too. You're buffering two people.
So what happened? So how'd you get from there to starting your own practice, specializing in selling other CPA firms?
So I actually left that company and I worked as a controller for a company here in Charleston for a while and decided that I wanted to try to get back into public practice. And I had a friend of mine who purchased a firm through a business broker out of Atlanta and went to CPE with him. And we were playing pool after CPE. And he said, yeah, you ought to call this guy. He all he does is sell CPA firms. And so I was like, huh. So I come back to Charleston the next day and I forgot who the guy was that he told me to call. And so I Googled the wrong guy and called, I called Howard Holmes, who was just at that point getting started with accounting practice sales. And I emailed Howard and he said, well, I don't have any CPA firms for sale in South Carolina. Would you like to start selling CPA firms? That was pretty much the email. And I was like, wow, okay, maybe I do. So we started talking and I flew to Dallas. They were headquartered in Dallas and he signed me up to sell CPA firms for accounting practice sales. So I started with them and that's how I got started in this business. And then when he sold the company a few years later, I started Poe Group Advisors.
It sounded like you wanted to go back to public practice, but you took... It didn't take too much convincing for you to be like, nah, I'm just going to sell CPA firms.
Well, it was an interesting conversation to have with Howard. So have you ever had a conversation with someone where you just can't shoot any holes into what they're saying? Like you come into it with a little bit of skepticism.
Yeah, that's my wife every day.
Yeah. And there's just no holes in the logic. You can't shoot any holes in it. It was like bulletproof. And so I had numerous conversations with him that were like that. And I kind of decided, you know, this was sort of the best marriage of my skills because I didn't really have a passion to go back into public accounting. I had more of a passion to be my own boss. that was really what was driving me, is I wanted to do my own thing. You know, I wanted to be rewarded for my efforts. I didn't want my efforts to just go to someone else. So that was what drove me. And then when I found out, well, gosh, I can use my sales skills that I had learned by selling plumbing supplies to builders and plumbers. You know, I didn't know it at the time, but the experience between a father and son was good experience for brokering.
So,
well, talking about being your own boss, I think right now I'm having issues being other people's bosses. As I really stepped out from the role of actually doing a lot of the accounting work and into being like a CEO, I'm having a lot of trouble being other people's boss, because that means that I'm really answering to them more so than just answering to clients. Like, I actually have to do what I say I'm going to do, and I'm not that responsible. This is a new thing for me. I used to not have this problem, but I think not actually doing work, I can't bury myself in the work. There's a lot of levels to that too.
There is. And I think it's a constant challenge, right? You come in that startup mode, and then you start to really need help, and you make the decision that you have is to stop being the worker bee. And that's the challenge of scaling, right? You're scaling a business, and that's a whole different animal than starting a business. And I actually think that the mindsets, you know, when you start a business, you have this sort of fierce independence and this sort of self-reliance and this drive, right?
Roll your sleeves up and do it all as much as you can. Yeah.
Do it all. And you like it because there's a lot of variety, right? Oh, man, then you've got to hold people accountable. And like you said, you need people to hold you accountable. And it's just a completely different switch. And I think there are a lot of mindset shifts that need to happen too, mainly letting go. Like, I feel like what you're doing.
You can't let all of it go, though, too. Like, you know.
Yeah. Definitely, for sure.
Choose what you let go and stick to it, right?
But most people, I think most CPAs, they have a hard time really letting go of things. So the fact that you've done that is amazing. Like, the fact that you're scratching your head going, now what do I do? is a good thing.
Yeah.
Because so many CPAs just can't let go of a client or a project or certain administrative duties. And I mean, they just have to stay into everything.
Well, what do you say to somebody that can't let go? What's like the first step?
Well, the first step is like, do you really want to let go? I mean, there's nothing wrong with saying, okay, I'm not going to scale. I'm going to stay where I am, and I'm just going to be sort of a craftsman person where I just do really high quality work and more specialized, or go up the value chain in different ways. There's nothing wrong with that answer. So I think the first thing is, do you want to scale or do you not want to scale? And when you make that decision to scale, I think it has to be sort of a systematic approach. You've got to put everything on the table. Like, what are you really good at? If you're really good at tax planning or sales, maybe those are the things that you don't give up for a while. You can give it up in stages, right? Okay, I'm going to give up the admin. And then you grow a little bit because you have capacity. It's funny how capacity works. As soon as you create capacity for yourself, most people
fill it up. Whoop. Yeah.
But I think it can be a stepping process. It doesn't have to all happen at once, but
yeah. But
you have to prioritize, like, okay, what do I want to give up? What do I want to keep? What am I not sure about? And what skill set do I have? What skill set do I need to go get? So a lot of questions come up when you think about scaling.
What about you? Have you run into any of that at
Pelham Advisors? Oh, yeah, absolutely. We've got 14 on our team now. And my problem is I almost let go of it all. Like, I abdicate. I don't delegate. I just say, here, do this. Go figure out how to do this. So I have to watch myself from that. I have to make myself give people really good instructions and help set up processes. And that's what I have to kind of force myself to do to be organized with it. So I haven't had a ton of trouble letting go. I've had the biggest trouble is finding the right people that I'm willing to let it go too. That's been my challenge, is making good hires. At one point, I made this just horrible hire. It was just this, like, I had to let the guy go. But at the time, I was like, why did I ever hire this person? Like, what was I thinking, you know?
Did you figure it out? Did you figure out why?
Yeah, I figure out I'm probably not the best person to be the initial part of the hiring process. So we created this hiring process, and I have other people on my team do the initial screening. And so if they get through those filters, then I can make the final decision. We set up a process for hiring, and that's made a huge difference. And now we have a really good hiring process. So when we want to add somebody, we just pull that process out and follow it.
It's processes, right? Like, you can't abdicate something if you have a process. You really are just delegating it, because they know you slide right into whatever next step is.
Yeah.
Now, if there is no process, then, and they have to figure out that process, then they end up, you know, really just answering to whatever you're asking, right? Like, right. I think that's what I've done in certain areas, that we don't have a process, and now rubber's meeting the road. I got to jump back into sales, because, you know, as much as I thought we had a sales process, we don't have clear pricing. Like, we don't have a pricing metrics or strategy. So that's the hardest part about sales in my mind right now.
You know? Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's like everything can be kind of broken down, right? Like, I was talking to teammates who's in Toronto, and we're talking about email management, which is something you and I were talking about briefly there, Scott, before we started. Yeah. And it's like, it's just this constant thing. He's like, you know, you can usually put email into like 5 or 6 different types of categories that emails are in. And so then you can get somebody to manage your inbox. I think everything's like that. If you slow down, think about it, break it down, it's not impossible to delegate it to someone else.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause everybody gets caught up in the details. They get wrapped up in all of the emails they have to respond to now, and they're all variable. They're all different. And they can't think of any commonality because they're stuck in the details.
Yeah. It's, I'm glad that I scaled. We're growing pretty rapidly, and I feel like that's exciting. I like growth.
So talk a little bit about how you've structured your team. I mean, you know, you're more or less professional services like us.
So one of the things that we do every year, one of the nice things about a CPA firm and anyone serving that industry is that the seasonality of it is actually a good thing, because when you do slow down, we slow down in the wintertime during tax season, you can step back and really look at your processes and see what's working and what's not working. And that's one thing we've done over the years in the brokerage business. It's like, okay, what are the pain points? What are the deals that didn't go as smoothly as they should have? And what went really well, and what can we do to tweak that process? You know, we've almost developed it through identifying pain points. You have to kind of start with something, right? You got to start somewhere. And so if someone wants to make a process, my suggestion is just, okay, document what you're doing now, and then go through it, try to document it as well as you can. And then collaboratively meet with your team and say, okay, where are the pain points? What is the client not liking? Or what is the client complaints? What are the team complaints? And make the process better by identifying those negatives. That's what we've done.
So what's the, when you're going to sell a CPA practice, everyone listening has a, it's part of a firm. Like, what's a buyer looking for now?
That's a tough question, because it's shifting a little bit. The landscape is changing pretty quickly. Ultimately, they're looking for two things: cash flow to owner and the freedom that the practice will allow them. Growth, a close third place.
What are the size of the practices? Because, you know, when you say cash flow to owner, is it sometimes multiple owners? Is it partners, or is it single operating firms? Are they a million?
Our wheelhouse is like the under 5 million space. So sure. Most of our practices, you know, on the smaller end are going to be $300,000-$400,000 solo practices up to, you know, $2-4 million firms with usually a couple of partners.
So what do you mean by freedom?
So freedom to me means just not working too many hours and having days off. One thing I've noticed is the practice owners who have the most freedom also tend to have the best cash flow to owner. And
that's interesting.
Yeah.
What's the band on those? Like the ones that are, if you were to think off the top of your head, most frequent, like size and number of employees and, you know, structure.
I'll give you a great example. We had a firm that we sold a couple of years ago in Canada, and it was a one owner firm. He was doing about 2.3 million in revenue, I believe. Sole owner, cash flow to owner was over a million a year for the owner. And he took about 3 months off a year, which was incredible. He had, I can't remember exactly how big his team was, but it wasn't terribly large. He had about 3 or 4 really highly, just really strong CPAs that worked for him. He had really good clients, pretty large business entities. And he just didn't do any of the work, delegated everything. So he had just figured out, I think he figured out a few things. He figured out how to find really good clients. He knew how to price them. So he's really good at pricing. And then he knew how to find and keep really good people for his team. And he was not a perfectionist. He did not get caught up with, you know, files being perfect, or wasn't a perfectionist at all.
Well, so, I can relate. This is my problems with pricing, is I'm trying to get that shit perfect, and yeah, it's never going to be perfect. And that's where I always hit a wall. And that, when I stepped away from all the work, everything became effortless because I don't really care about the details now. Like, I don't want to look into them. I'm too far removed. But yep, the pricing, yeah, it's I'm trying to always make it perfect. And I think that's where, you know, you're touching on some really good points here for a lot of firms. And this is, at what point do they want to start giving things up? And what point does it not, like, or could they be the reason, like, that things are being held back because they're striving for perfection in a lot of areas?
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. And you know, if you think about how our profession sort of works, it's like, if you look at the technical aspects of the work, there's so many professional standards and so many reasons where perfectionism actually is rewarded in this profession, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's not rewarded when you're running a business.
Yes.
That doesn't hold up in running a business.
I think it kind of goes back to what you were talking about before, which was you're trained as a CPA to do these detail things. And then when you try to start managing them, it's kind of the opposite. And you're not taught how to manage. You have to learn that. But all your skills that you've ever been taught in your entire life are the complete opposite of how to manage somebody.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely, yeah.
And you're trying to scale that and go. And like, as you hire people,
it's messy, right?
Yeah.
It's a little messy.
Well, when you're the technician and you're doing the work, you are rewarded for finding errors and for finding things that were wrong and finding where it's not perfect. So then try to scope that out into, you know, finding errors in what your team might be doing wrong or what's wrong with this process. And you're going to go downward spiral because there's never perfection there. Like, there might be a perfect tax return in somebody's eyes, but there's never a perfect system.
And like, hiring is messy. You know, nobody, no person is perfect, right? No employee is perfect. You're not going to be the perfect manager. Yeah, you're going to make mistakes. I mean, it's messy. And you have to have the right attitude towards it. You can't beat yourself up when you make a mistake.
You got to be buoyant. You got to be able to get back to the next one and be prepared to make another mistake. You
know? Yeah. I was listening to this podcast, this guy who built a pretty big company. And they used to have these weekly meetings where they would have like this thing where they would share their failures, and they would just, he wanted to kind of celebrate failures, and they would just like, man, I had this thing, I messed up. It was, it was awful. And they would just laugh about it to build a culture where failure, some failure was acceptable.
Celebrate your failures.
Because that's how you learn. You learn from the failures.
Yeah, he didn't want people to be so afraid to take chances that they were just retreat all the time and did those perfectionistic tendencies holding them back. So,
yeah, and that's exactly what the CPA, like, you're taught to do the opposite of that.
Yep.
Never, you're taught not to give advice because you don't want to give the wrong advice.
You don't want somebody to come back and sue you because you gave them this advice and then it really backfired on them. And like, you're always afraid of what's the worst that could happen. So be very conservative and try not to take any risks, so to speak.
So give us a little overview kind of the market. You kind of talked about it a little bit, but tell us what's going on out there.
Well, the market's really hot for cloud firms. We're seeing high demand for virtual firms.
What is a cloud firm? Just no physical space. Just they do everything remotely.
Well, I would say there's like, that's a full cloud firm where the team is remote. But I think you could also include in that definition of a cloud firm, a firm that's got a office where people work, but all of your client work is remote.
So that's where I want to go. We sold our office this past year, and I want to go back to an office.
So how many firms do you think are not like that now? Because we live in this bubble where we're always talking with all of our friends are all cloud.
Yeah, everybody on our podcast has been a cloud firm in one way or another.
No, there's still a lot of traditional firms out there. Even through COVID, they're still doing things sort of the old-fashioned way. I would say the majority of the firms that we sell are more traditional in nature. But that's changing. Like, it's definitely shifting pretty quickly. But
is there an age group for that? What's the commonality, I guess? Is it age? Is it mindset? Is it how long they've been doing it?
A lot of it is age, and it's also mindset. It's just the inertia. You know, it's like, well, this is the way we've always done it. So this is the way we're going to do it. You know, it's just
money
inertia.
And inertia. Yeah. Money. If they're getting paid for it and they're making money on it, why would they want to change? That's the one thing that's part of our intro is like, you know, the money and inertia in our industry. And to be fair, who's telling them to change? Everything's working. Clients aren't leaving.
There's something to be said for meeting in person. I mean, I enjoy meeting people in person, and I mean, my business is pretty virtual as well. You know, we don't meet a lot of our clients because the geography that we cover is pretty large. So it's not practical for us. But when I do meet with a client, I enjoy it. So if you're in a pretty large city and your clients want to come in and meet, I don't know that there's anything inherently wrong with that.
There's not.
But if you're talking about selling your business, it's easier to sell a business where you don't have that in-person contact, where it is a virtual offering.
Is that because you can sell it to anybody? Like, kind of like the nature of your business is, you know, you have a bigger market to sell to if you're virtual. So you're able to come, you know, there's other things that make it easier to command a higher price. Also because you have, the market supply and demand, right? Like, there's not too many of the virtual firms out there.
That's exactly right, because we can sell it to anyone from anywhere in the country. So we just got a listing in Wyoming, and we've got people looking at it from all over the country, and it can be operated from anywhere. So why not? So
explain like how a CPA firm is valued.
So the rule of thumb in the industry that's been pretty well known is one times
revenue.
Gross revenue. We see practices go for more than that. We see practices go for less than that. The market used to be where, when I first got into this business, I think earnouts were pretty common, meaning an earnout formula is, okay, if a firm says, okay, I'll give you one times gross for your practice, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you 20% down, and then next year, depending on what I keep, I'll give you 20% of collections. And then they'll do that for maybe a 4-year period. So that's their definition of one times. But
you're never going to see one time if somebody does that. Never
going to see one times. You're never going to see one times. And it puts all the risk on the seller, really. And that's not, we don't feel like the risk should just be on the seller, because the buyer's the one making the decisions. Once they take over the practice, they're making the pricing decisions, the service decisions, and that ultimately is what is going to determine if those clients stick around or not. So most of our deals are fixed price deals, cash deals. There's pretty good financing in the marketplace for CPA firms. Matter of fact, there's really good like 10-year SBA acquisition loans that can be gotten with pretty low money down. So if you want to buy a CPA firm, you can. You know, as long as you've got 10% that you can inject, you can typically borrow the rest. But, you know, depending on the profitability of the firm, the size of the firm, the size of the market for the firm, that multiple is going to vary. We have seen the highest multiple our company has ever sold was actually this year. We sold one for over 2x revenue. Definitely an outlier.
Why was that one so valuable?
Well, it was in the Toronto market. It was sort of the ideal size firm, about $500,000 in revenue. It was very focused. The profitability of the firm, I think, was around 65 or 70% cash flow to owner. So it was just lean, and the clients were, it was a curated list, and that the problem clients were out of the practice. And
yeah. It's like somebody getting to $1 million and shaving off half of their business to scale it down to really what it should be. And then, you know, at the end of the day, if it was 2x.
Yeah. So if you're going to go sell it, like if I was like, hey, I want to sell my practice in 3 years, what are the things I should do to increase the value of the firm?
Well, we tell people in Counter Practice Academy to track four KPIs. They're super simple. So the first thing I would do is I'd start tracking these KPIs. Top line revenue, your cash flow to owner percentage, right? The number of days off you take as the owner. And when I say a day off, I mean off, like not checking email, not calling into the office, like off, where you're completely unplugged. And then the fourth is just your head count, your staff count. Just start tracking those things and see what happens.
I love those. Those are four great, easy KPIs that matter. You're not worried about time. You're not worried about WIP. You're not worried about hours.
Yep.
It's just top line, bottom line, happiness, basically.
Yep. Yeah. Real simple. Start tracking those things. If you can't take days off, either you don't have the right team or you've got the wrong kind of work. You know, I, one of the biggest things I see with practices is like, if you're a small firm and you're trying to do 10 different types of work, like if you're doing audit, review, financial, wealth management, sort of financial services type work, expert witnessing, expert testimony, valuation. If you're doing all of that, you are not making money on all of those different lines of business. You're probably losing money on several of them.
I mean, people are chasing that top line. A lot of those that you said, you know, they could command a higher ticket price, but however you're pricing it, better have some good systems in place to capture that value internally to get some profit on there. Otherwise, it's a time suck and it's an energy suck and everything else.
Yes.
And distraction too.
It's a distraction. I mean, audit work is probably the best example I can think of for small firms. Like if you're doing a handful of audit work, a handful of audits, you're probably losing money on that segment. You almost need an audit partner, somebody just dedicated to it, focused on it, or rather heavily focused on it.
Yeah. When I started my career, I worked in audit, and it was a regional sized firm, and they had 3 people in the audit department. It was the audit partner, me, and another guy. And the audit partner left. They don't do an audit anymore at all. the auto partner left, I don't have a job. You know, that's, and the other guy didn't have a job. But yeah, I mean, it's, if you're doing these one-off services because the client asked for them, and that's the only reason you're going to do it, and you think you can charge a lot for it, please reconsider. This big valuation project, you're not going to make any money on that.
So. Yeah. The other thing, I think that if you're trying to get your practice ready for market, pricing is key. Like pricing, if you get the pricing figured out in a practice, that'll fix a lot of the other problems in the practice.
Like that, honestly, I'm dealing with it at this moment. So
yeah, and that's where you see, like, if you're taking a fair number of days off and your people are taking a fair number of days off, then you can't let yourself get overcommitted, right? Or those things start to suffer. And if you're tracking those things, then that's why we say track your number of days off.
Oh, by the way, before we even start.
Sponsor alert.
Sponsor alert. Who's our sponsor this week, Ackerman?
Relay. Or is it Relay?
Oh, Jesus Christ. Here we go.
It's Relay, people. Most of the things I say are a joke.
No, I tend to understand it. I just don't like the joke. So that's why I act like I
didn't get it. That's my wife.
We're going to talk about our own use of Relay Financial. The Sons of CPAs powered by Relay. Our bank account is with Relay, and it's been going smashingly well so far. What have we done on our bank account?
We've made money. We've reimbursed ourselves, so we've done distributions.
We're reimbursed ourselves for equipment. For all you listeners out there, we want the stuff sounding better.
Yeah, because when you take a reimbursement, that's an expense. We can deduct that. Maybe.
We're not teaching accounting here. You said you don't even know how I did accounting. I know how to.
That's not what we're talking about. Relay is so easy to set up. I was skeptical. I have to admit, I was skeptical. I was like, I don't think we could set up a bank account this fast. And Relay, we set it up in like 20 minutes.
It really did take less than a week. 10 minutes to fill everything out. And then just verifying that we're a real company. And then it was set up effortless. Connected with Xero, couple steps there. So you, listeners, as their advisor, get bank fees that don't break and they sync directly into QuickBooks Online or Xero. From my experience, it's a direct fee and it is a strong fee. They got a pretty strong grip on there. You'll also get detailed transaction data, so you won't have to use Google to decode the transactions. Relay even embeds check images. That's a big one too. Check images. I don't like pulling checks.
Plus, you don't have to share passwords and two-factor authentication codes with Relay. Safely log into client banking with your own login. That's a huge thing. You have one login for all your clients. It's like your Gusto login or your Xero login. It's one login.
Safe value add right there, because that saves you some time and it's also safe.
And if everyone was on Relay, it would make it so much easier. We sell the shit out of this ad. You're welcome, Relay.
Well, no. I mean, let's be fair. To the listener out there, are you fast forwarding? Did you fast forward through this? And are you even listening?
We're making it impossible for you to fast forward because it's so long.
You got anything to say? Closing arguments here?
I like Relay. We're going to use it more. You guys should too.
I got a little high since we started reading. And I kind of forgot where we were at. So I think you should just visit relayfi.com/SonsOfCPAs. That's sons with an S. CPA. There's three S's in there. You can't get it wrong. Sons of CPAs.
Please use the code, people. Why'd you decide to start Accounting Practice Academy?
Well, I've been a big believer in coaching for a long time. So I started in a program called Strategic Coach back in 2009 as a person who got coached. And I just realized the value of it in my own business, how that has helped me grow and how it's helped me take time off and really think about and being very intentional about how I wanted to grow the business and also how I wanted to basically live my life, like what was important in terms of family and health and, you know, very holistic, strategic planning approach. In 2010, I wrote a book called Accountant's Flight Plan. And in writing that book, it made me, let me back up before that. So whenever I would sell a practice that was seemed to have all the things going really well, I would interview the seller and say, you know, why are you so good at hiring staff? How is it that you have such good staff? And I would just listen to them and take notes. And so I realized I had this notebook, like, wow, there's a lot of value in this notebook right here. So I essentially turned that into a book, which is Accountant's Flight Plan. And so I wrote that in 2010, and I started getting really good feedback on it. People were like, man, I'm implementing this stuff and it's working. You know, my profitability is going up, my revenue is going up. And so about 2015, I decided, okay, I want to launch some kind of coaching business. And my original plan was to launch an in-person coaching business, but it was just too big of a lift for me to do with the brokerage business, because the brokerage business was my bread and butter. I didn't want to take my eye off of that ball. And then in 2019, I got to lunch with a friend of mine who has a marketing business. And he's like, why don't you launch a virtual coaching program? Just do it virtually. Like, huh? He's like, yeah, I know this guy that is teaching people how to do Airbnb. And the coaching business really took off for him. So I looked into it, and that's when I decided. So in the fall of 2019, right before the pandemic, we started creating Accounting Practice Academy. And Lee, you know, we had it pretty much written prior to February of 2020. And then we were actually building it during the height of the lockdowns in our area. Did a podcast on how we built this with Accounting Practice Academy. And one of the things that was interesting is when we filmed the first four modules, there was no traffic on the street. Like, you couldn't hear any street traffic because of the pandemic. And then we finished filming it like in the spring of 2020, and the cars had come back. It was harder to film because we had a lot more cuts. You know, a truck would go by or something. So
were you like filming outside on site? Is that how you were doing it? Or,
well, we had, so that's an interesting thing too. We had booked a studio to film it in. And the night before we were supposed to start filming, the owner of the video production company called me and he says, I can't put my crew together because of COVID. So we said, oh. And at that point, we'd already had people sign up for Accounting Practice Academy in the spring. So we'd already sold some workshops. So we just decided to film it in-house. As luck would have it, Ian Brennan, who's now my creative director for Accounting Practice Academy, he went to film school and he knew how to edit. And he knew enough about videography to tape it. So he ended up filming it.
That's awesome.
That's cool. We have a lady in our office going through it right now, and the feedback's been good so far.
Good.
I'm letting her do, I'm trying to do a thing where instead of, you know, I feel like as an owner, we do like all the fun CP, like we go to Vegas and do this stuff. So I'm trying to get other people in the office to do the fun stuff.
Yeah. I think she's enjoying it too, right?
I think she is. I think it's true. I mean, just the four KPIs you told me today was.
What's so fun about doing it? What is she enjoying?
I think it's just like learning how what's important in running a practice, and how you can let yourself, you know, it's not you. You're not the most important thing. It's everything else and setting up the processes and making sure you're setting up people for success, which I think is what you've been talking about this whole podcast, teaching people how to do it.
Yeah.
So are you teaching her how to run your practice? Is that what you're doing?
I think you want everybody to know how to run the practice a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, she's your operations person. I mean, she's kind of your, your integrator for those people who are doing EOS. Like it's she's your integrator. Exactly. Right?
Yeah, we do EOS. I'm thinking now maybe my integrator should watch this. Like that's something that
Sign up. But yeah, I think everyone, like I think the biggest problem with the people we have are the people who don't see the bigger picture of how to run an accounting practice. Like they don't understand how we make money, which is weird to me because like that's all you do is accounting. But yeah, it's a big problem. Like people don't understand that like you have to charge the client.
I don't know. I don't think that's weird to think because most accountants aren't trained to run a business. They're trained to do accounting. You know, you get your license and you get into figuring out how to do the work, not how to run your business or how to run your client's business. Because not a lot of accounting firms are doing effective forecasting and advisory unless they have those that are outside of the profession come in and assist with that. That's what I'm seeing. I think to a certain degree, like a lot of accountants aren't the best business planners and the best at running their own firm.
So give us, before we go, give us the one piece of advice for our CPA owners. If you could give them one thing.
He's given a lot of advice. Yeah, I want to.
Yeah, you've given a lot. Let's sum it all up into one thing.
Yeah.
I would say make time to think about what you're doing. Don't just let inertia make all your decisions for you.
Now, the other question we usually ask is, where do you see the industry in 5 years?
I think a lot of the lower level work is going to be handled by the software and maybe even through outsourcing. And so the structure of a firm will be more diamond shaped than pyramid shaped, where your mid-level CPA is going to be the bulk of your staff, and have the owners more in that top role, diamond shaped organizational structure.
It's validation for me. Like I, to a certain degree, we already have that diamond, like a 10-person firm is all people in the middle that are all CPAs.
What I would like to see, and I don't know if this will be the case or not, but I would like to see is there's more time spent with business clients just in conversation to help them run better businesses. So I'd like to see CPAs. I mean, like Jason, you and I, we sit down once a quarter and you pull up my numbers and you ask me questions about my P&L. And that is so helpful. Like
I said, he needs to charge you more for that.
Yeah.
we were talking about that. I said, he needs to charge more for that. There's a lot of value there. Like that's
there's a ton of value there. Yeah. I mean, it's not
that much work. It's just time and looking at your stuff. And
yeah, but you're looking at it wrong. You're looking at how much work you're doing and all that, but the value that you're bringing to Brandon.
It's a lot of value, but that's what I'm saying is like the CPA owners are, they're spending all this time on the not valuable stuff, and the valuable stuff is talking to clients and having those conversations.
Yeah. And we have fun having those conversations, right? Like it doesn't take, you're not like prepping for those or, but it doesn't make it any less valuable. Like,
yeah, get your zero file like a couple minutes before and kind of compare it. And then I come up with a few questions that I want to ask you. And then normally that's our conversation leads down a million paths. And it's valuable for me too, because that's how you learn from, I get to see stuff, not just from you, but from other clients, and they're seeing things in their industries that I might.
Yeah.
That was my point, is you're preparing every day by talking with all those other clients that it's like this podcast. You don't do much to prepare for it. You show up, but it's everything else. Like it's all the other conversations you're having that makes it
exactly
valuable to listeners, right?
Exactly. And so the more you do that, the more valuable you become in your group, right? So it's like, but so many CPAs are focused, hyper-focused on the compliance work, and they, you know, they're sort of in a scarcity mindset where like, I can't say no to these 1040s that are coming in. So I got to say yes to those. And then they're tied up with stuff that's not really that high value work. And they're missing the stuff that they should be doing. I can't tell you how many business owners, like I'm president of EO Charleston. I don't know if you're familiar with EO, Entrepreneurs Organization.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been involved with EO for I guess going on 4 years now, and I'm shocked. I'll have a really successful business owner, and they'll say they don't really understand their numbers very well. And I find that shocking. Like, I figure, well, God, this is a pretty successful owner. He should be pretty savvy about knowing his numbers. And then come to find out they don't. And you're like, well, do you not get any guidance from your accountant? Like, any analysis from where your margins are and where your money's coming from and your lines of business? You not have any sort of cost accounting information? They don't have that. They don't have it. They're operating kind of in the dark as far as an accountant would be concerned. And I don't think accountants really realize how many of their clients are sort of operating that way.
They're operating off of their bank balance, a lot of them.
Yeah, and they want help.
They want it.
But we're not the firms are not set up to help.
Yep. So I would, if we could come back in 5 years, I'd love to see firms helping their clients more in that way.
Let's get hyper-focused on help. Hyper-focused on proactive measures instead of the hyper-focused on just the work, too.
I love that. Put that on the calendar, Scott, 5 years from now and see what's happening. Okay, so tell us where we can find Accounting Press Academy if you want to sign up. You have a free book. I think I have it here.
I have a free book called The Unplugged Vacation. Go to accountingpracticeacademy.com. I think you can find the book on our resources page at accountingpracticeacademy.com. If you're in...
I have it somewhere. Because I got Brandon to go to Vegas this year to engage. And Scott. Scott came too. And he was hawking those books.
Every time I go to Mexico, I have to unplug because we don't have internet. Most of the time when I'm there, like...
That's ideal. That's
70% of the time I'm there, that's my unplugged
time. Yeah. Yeah, go great. It's free. It's a free ebook on the website. And if you're interested in buying or selling a CPA firm, go to pogroupadvisors.com.
Link in the show notes.
Great. Awesome. This has been amazing.
This has been fun.
And we'll talk on our quarterly call soon.
Yeah, sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brandon.